When I was a little girl, I was home alone one day. It was just me and my oldest brother, and this was unusual. Usually, our house was brimming with half a dozen people, us four kids and the two adults, but for some reason, on this summer afternoon, it was just me and my oldest brother. And I had a notion of going swimming. So out in our backyard, we had this above-ground swimming pool, and in the shade of our tall Ohio maple trees, the water temperature never seemed to get above 60 degrees. But I wanted to swim in it, and I wanted to swim on my own, like a big girl. I didn't want my oldest brother to join me. And we never really got along anyway. I was a pretty spoiled youngest child. Not only was I the youngest, but I was the only girl. And my birthday ended up being a few days before my oldest brother's, almost like to steal attention from him. And so for the rest of our life, to take power back, he had to tease me mercilessly. And these photos don't really show that the relationship was actually pretty strained. So I was glad that day, glad that he was staying in the house while I went out back to swim. I climbed that rickety metal ladder, and I was just working up the courage to jump into that frigid water when I slipped, and I gashed my knee. And when my oldest brother heard my cries, he came running to the backyard to see what happened. Maybe he was scared in that moment. Maybe he didn't know if I was going to need stitches and how he and I would get to the hospital. Maybe he didn't know if mom and dad would get him in trouble when they got back home. But I don't remember any of that. I do remember him bandaging me up. I remember how he said, "Don't you hate how grown-ups are so afraid of germs that when they put the Band-Aid on, they insist on only touching those little flappy things? It's like, who cares?" I thought, I felt the same way. Grown-ups were so fussy. And so we bonded together in our little rebellion over the Band-Aid flaps. And I like the wrinkly white scar that I have on my left knee. Because every time I see that scar, I think of him. A relationship with a brother is a sweet gift and a curse at the same time. They can be the person you laugh with more than with anyone else, that free, easy laughter of all those inside jokes. But they can be the person who digs at your weaknesses and broadcasts your flaws better than anyone else. And really, this is true of anyone we know and love well. A brother or a sister, a cousin, a longtime friend who has become like a sibling to us. Once you know someone that well, and they know you that well, they can teach you more about God's love than maybe any other relationship. But they can also be a real pain. Jesus said there was a man who had two sons. There was a man who loved his two little boys and tried to raise them into good, healthy men. But no parent is perfect, and no child is perfect. And when the two little boys grew up, the younger son did something pretty brash. He demanded his share of the estate. For those of us here this morning who are blessed to still have parents who are living, it's hard to imagine someone doing this. Maybe you would sit down with your parents and talk through their plans for retirement savings or whether they've filled out advance directives. But I doubt any of us would go so far as to ask them, you know, how much money am I getting after you're gone? Let alone to ask them, well, could you go ahead and give me that money now? It's a bold move. But it tells us something about the younger son's character. And then what he does with the money tells us even more. It's like he takes a boat to Amsterdam to spend some time in the red light district. It says he travels to another country and spends the property, squanders the property in dissolute living. So word on the street is he's hanging out with prostitutes. So picture him traveling, getting blackout drunk, gambling and betting money, sleeping around, using people, discarding people, throwing away the life savings his father had spent years building for his sons. It can be hard to stay loving with a person like that. When you watch them turn their back on all that is good and go after all that will do them harm, it can be hard to stay loving. My oldest brother and I couldn't seem to get along. And yeah, he bandaged my knee, but that was just one bright, shining moment in an otherwise dark relationship. What I didn't realize at the time was that he was battling his own demons. When he was in middle school and high school, he gradually started to rebel and to experiment. So what started out first as smoking cigarettes turned into drinking alcohol, and then into using marijuana, and then on and on, and finally into harder drugs. And so every year on my birthday, as I blew out the candles on my cake, every year I made the same exact wish. Year after year, I wished for his sobriety. I wished for him to have a long and healthy life. And so even in a family celebration like that, there was always this cloud of sadness and worry. And some Christmases, we weren't sure if he would show up. Sometimes we didn't even know where he was. And when he did show up, I had to quickly put together a gift for him. I would pull random books off my shelves and wrap them in wrinkled paper. It became a cycle of seeing the one you love go in and out of jail, in and out of rehab, in and out of relationship. When a member of the family runs away, or maybe doesn't even run away, but just wanders away, things get swept into chaos. How do you love someone through the mess? Do you give tough love or unconditional love? Do you love with boundaries or love without measure? When does love become enabling? And when does your own heart become hardened? Prodigal son reached his lowest point when he ran out of money and when the country ran out of food. That's when he realized his true need. And the way Jesus tells the story, he says he came to himself. He came to, like when you wake up from fainting. And I am sure that the family of that prodigal son was just waiting for the day when he would come to himself and come back. And some members of the family may have given up on him and written him off, but the father never stopped waiting for his son to come home. Part of me wanted to give up on my brother, but part of me couldn't stop turning every birthday wish into a wish for him. And so even as my prayers dried up from time to time, still I kept coming back to my one wish, that he would be okay. I don't know what it was that made my brother finally come to himself, what finally made him realize his true need. But I do know that finally, after 16 years of battling drug addiction, finally, in March of 2008, he took his last drink, his last hit, and as of this March, 2018, he has been 10 years sober. Mm-hmm. Where once I wasn't sure if he would live, now I marvel at the fact that he has been alive and fully alive for a decade. And you know, he used to be a little out of shape as he was trying to get off of cigarettes, but now he's lifting weights and rock climbing and ice climbing and hiking in Alaska. By the grace of God, even with his record, he still received a federal government job where he is now taking biologists by ship out to the Aleutian Islands for environmental research. It took complete surrender. That's the only way. Years later, he told me, you know, I thought maybe I could do just marijuana or just pills. I thought I could do just beer and not hard liquor or just wine and not beer, but it was impossible. It had to be all or nothing. He had to surrender to a higher power and surrender to the wisdom and influence of the people all around him, the other people in recovery. He had to rely on them and take it one day at a time. And now we as his family, we get to celebrate because this brother of ours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. If you want to know whether I believe in miracles, my answer is yes, because my brother has been sober 10 years. I believe God answers prayers because I prayed he would get clean. God heard my cry and God answered me. But I don't mean to make it simple, and I don't mean to say it's transactional. We don't get every miracle we ask for. I wish we did. But I still believe in the power of prayer and in a big God who longs for every person to flourish, for every person to have freedom from chains, for every person to know the joy, the peace, the fulfillment of a full life lived in the power of the Holy Spirit. Because one day a son who'd wandered away came to himself and came back to his father. And one day a father saw him and was filled with compassion, ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. God has done it before. God can do it again. Is there a prodigal in your life that you're trying to pray for lately? I'm wondering if all of us might know a prodigal, someone who has wandered from a place of safety into a place of struggle. We need to pray for each other in that. We want to pray for that person in your life who's been placed on your heart, or that friend of a friend, anyone who is in need of complete surrender. So ask the ushers come forward. Would you write that person's name, just their first name, on that slip of paper that was in your bulletin? You can write down their name and then place it in the offering plate when it comes your way. And this is a way we can collect all of these prayers together, and we can be in prayer for our brothers and sisters, for these sons and daughters that the Lord is longing to hold again. So as we receive the sweet music and we spend this time in holy prayer, let's write down a name and let it be held before God.